Especially for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me that I too may go and worship him, which is a lie. He wanted to kill Jesus. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, there's a lot of dreams in the Christmas story, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. So was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Got a little tongue-tied there. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious and gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. After Herod died, another angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. And it goes on to say right after that, telling him to go home to Israel. Alrighty, let's take a look at these two characters of Christmas and see what their lives actually have to do with our lives. And let's start with Herod. There's a lot of Herods in the Bible. If you've read through the New Testament, there's just like Herods all over the place. It's a very common name. The Herod we read about today was called Herod the Great, though I don't believe he was great. He was a king in the region where Jesus was born, and he ruled with an iron fist under the authority of Rome and in the authority of Caesar. Herod was a murderous tyrant. He killed two of his own sons, more on that later. He also drowned a brother-in-law in the family pool, and he had one of his wives killed and one of his mother-in-laws killed. And when nearing his death, this will show you what kind of person he was, he had all the influential people in the region gathered together and brought to a stadium. And his orders to his underlings were this, that when he took his last breath, they were all to be executed on the spot. That would ensure that somebody wept on the day of his death. What a neat guy Herod was. He's like the definition of toxic masculinity. And his life was all about two things, fear and power. And let me explain, starting with fear. The first few verses of chapter 2 tell us that Herod asked the Magi, these Persian Zoroastrian priests and astrologers, where the baby Jesus was because he was disturbed. That word disturbed in Greek means he was troubled and terrified. So Herod was really afraid of a baby. That's what he was afraid of. Herod was driven by fear. He was afraid that he wouldn't get all he wanted, and he was afraid that what he already had might get taken away. This fear is why he killed two of his sons. He was afraid they would grow up to challenge his seat on the throne, so he just wiped them out. He just killed them. And his fear turned him into a murderous monster, so much so that when he couldn't locate the baby Jesus, he had all the boys 2 years of age and under murdered in this region in what is sadly and famously called the slaughter of the innocents. Power was also an issue for Herod. I don't know why so many people are put into positions of power who are so ill-equipped to handle power. It's happened all through history. It's happening right now in the world. It's happening right now in our country. It's a mystery to me. And Herod's an example of this. Herod completely abused his power. He used it to gain immense power. Personal wealth. Some historians think he was the richest person that ever walked the face of the earth. He was that rich. He had a palace built on the top of a mountain in a region where there was no mountains. He had the mountain made. This is it. He literally had this mountain made, and the ruins of his temple are on the top, and he named it, because he was a narcissist, Herodian. That was the name of his palace on the top. He also used his power to dominate and control and destroy. His abuse of power robbed him of his humanity. So what's all this have to do with us? Actually, plenty. Hold on a second. Oh, so much better. It has plenty to do with our lives. Let's get personal here and look at our own fear and power. Let's start with fear. All humans deal with fear. As a person with panic disorder, I deal with fear far more than most people, but all of us deal with fear. No wonder "be not afraid" is the most often repeated verse in the Bible besides verses about love, because people are afraid. But here's the thing about fear. Fear is boring. That's true. Think of your fears. Your fears are the most boring thing about you because they usually tell you no to anything. They make your life very predictable and monotonous. If we're not careful, our fears will actually rob us of so many things. They'll rob us of new ideas about God. They'll rob us of new relationships, new experiences, new opportunities. The list goes on. And fear, like power, can actually even rob us of our humanity if we allow it to make us harm the people that we somehow view as a threat in our lives, which is why we should write a letter to our fear, like the letter that author Elizabeth Gilbert wrote to her fear. She's the author of Eat, Pray, Love, and she wrote a letter to her fear. We should write the same kind of letter and say it out loud. I'll put it on the screen. You're going to love this. Fear, that's who she writes to. "I recognize and respect that you are part of this family, and so I will never exclude you from our activities, but still, your suggestions will never be followed. You're allowed to have a seat, and you're allowed to have a voice, but you're not allowed to have a vote. You're not allowed to touch the roadmaps. You're not allowed to suggest detours. You're not allowed to fiddle with the temperature. Dude, you're not even allowed to touch the radio. But above all else, my dear and old familiar friend, you're absolutely forbidden to drive." I just love that. We should write a letter to our fear letting it know, hey, I know you exist, but you can't drive. You can't control my life. You can't dominate it. And then there's power. We idolize power in our culture. Have you noticed that? We idolize it. That's why our history books are filled with stories of wars that we've won, because that makes us feel more powerful. It's why our national anthem has lines about bombs bursting in air, because that seems powerful to us. It's why we elect and promote people not based on their character, not even close. Oftentimes, we elect and promote people based solely on how powerful they seem to be. But we all have a choice when it comes to power. And I'm going to explain where this choice comes from, and I'm going to geek out on the Bible for a second. So stay with me. Look at this verse from Ephesians chapter 3. The Apostle Paul writes these words. He's an early church leader. And he says, "I became a servant of the gospel by the gift of God's grace given me through the working of his power." Now, that word power that Paul uses is the Greek word dunamis, where we get our word dynamite from. It describes this explosive, dynamic power. But here's the thing. The Apostle Paul in this verse says that he used this explosive life energy and power to serve people, not to dominate them. So the choice is really ours. You have power. We all have power. Will we use it to serve or dominate? Hopefully to serve, because it's way more fun and far more Jesus-y, okay? Now, let's move on to Joseph. Let's look at the life of Joseph. Joseph is actually the other Joseph in the Bible. He's not even the most famous Joseph. The most famous Joseph is found in the book of Genesis, the opening book of the Bible. He's the one with a technicolor dream coat that a Broadway musical was written after. This Joseph is actually a very inspiring dude. He's just not that famous. He was betrothed to be married to Mary, and when Mary got pregnant, not by him, which would have been a huge scandal at the time, he decided to divorce her privately because he didn't want to shame her, but also he didn't want anything bad to happen to her, and I'll explain that in a second. But then he gets this visit from an angel who tells him the baby was conceived by God, and he believes it. Now, you've heard the Christmas story over and over again, so you hear this and it seems like no big deal. But if you were in his shoes and you were engaged to be married to someone and an angel came to you in a dream at nighttime and said, "Hey, your wife's pregnant, your wife-to-be is pregnant, and it's conceived by God," you probably wouldn't believe that. You'd probably wake up and go, "Well, that was a bad dream. That was weird," okay? But he didn't do that. He didn't regard this angelic visitation as a hallucination or as the result of eating some questionable pizza or whatever he ate the night before. He believes the angel. Then Joseph gets more angelic visitations, the first one which causes him to be a refugee in a foreign land of Egypt, and a second one which brings him back home. Joseph's life was so drastically different than Herod's. Joseph's life was not about fear and power. It was about mercy and courage. Let me explain. First of all, mercy. Joseph was full of mercy. You see, according to ancient Jewish law, if your wife or wife-to-be was pregnant from a source that wasn't you, you had an obligation, according to the law, to take her back to her father, place her on her father's doorstep, where she would be stoned to death for her transgressions, which is brutal, I know, okay? It was a long time ago. But Joseph, because of this angelic message and because of the mercy in his heart, was not going to let that happen to the woman he loved. Joseph was also a man of great courage because he entered into a scandalous relationship on purpose, willingly. That took a lot of courage. He knew he would be fodder for the local gossip in his town, but he did it. It was also scary for another reason. Because back in this day, your well-being depended on your right standing in your community. He knew his scandalous relationship would burn a lot of bridges. A lot of people would shame and reject him. It would make it much harder for him to get work and make ends meet. This would be like one of us losing our job and our savings account all at once and you just had a baby. This was scary stuff he was doing. It was also brave of him to obey the angel's message and go to Egypt. Egypt! If you read through the Old Testament portion of the Bible, you'll realize that Egypt is the land where Joseph's ancestors were enslaved in for decades. Joseph would have grown up hearing the horror stories of what happened to his people because it was brutal. No Jew would ever want to go back to Egypt. And yet Joseph went. What a stunning burst of courage for he and Mary to do this. So let's get personal again. Let's focus on mercy and courage in our own life. And I'll start with mercy. It's a fancy Bible word, but what a great definition of mercy is this: radical kindness. We love a merciful God that's been radically kind to us every day of our life. And this same God invites us to be radically kind to people around us, whether they deserve it or not. And oftentimes, they do not. They do not. The problem is our world is often devoid of mercy. It's not a real merciful place. Look at what the brilliant poet Maya Angelou says about this. She writes this: "Life is ruthless. Nature has no mercy at all. Nature says, I'm going to snow. If you have on a bikini and no snowshoes, that's tough. I'm going to snow anyway." And that just kind of describes the world. It's not a very merciful place. Not just nature. Many of the people that we encounter don't seem to be merciful. Our world needs mercy. But here's the good news. Mercy doesn't make a lot of headlines, but there's people out there delivering mercy. They're bringing mercy and radical kindness to people. Let me give you a few great examples I came across. In 2016, you might remember, there was a massive influx of immigrants heading to Europe to flee their war-torn countries, and it created an alarming emergency of humanity. Their journeys were perilous. Many of them faced a lot of hardship on the way. Many of them even died. Many of the immigrants to Europe were Muslim, and upon their arrival to Europe, they faced even more hardship because some people viewed them as dangerous and unwanted, ignorantly labeling them as terrorists. At this time, Pope Francis did the coolest thing. Man, he's a cool dude if you read about Pope Francis, by the way. I'm not Catholic, but cool dude. He shows up at one of the camps, one of the immigrant camps in Europe, goes up to a group of these Muslim migrants and kneels down and kisses their feet. He didn't announce it, he just did it. He kissed all of their feet, and they probably weren't very clean feet in a migrant camp like this. And then he got up and told the world, it's time that we all start living in peace. He delivered mercy to people who desperately needed it. And then there was this. There was a writer's fair in Australia in 2023 where all writers from all over the world came, and they had a bunch of booths in this fair, kind of like we do at the county fair or at the country fair. And one of the booths was actually a poetry prescription booth. And what would happen is people would line up in line, they'd get up to the booth, and they would tell the people manning the booth the trouble and the pain and the hardship they'd endured the past year or were currently enduring. And the staffers would then prescribe them a poem. And they would take the poem, put it in a decorative jar, and hand it to the person. And they were to read it on their own. And the poem would bring them hope and encouragement and strength. The cool part is all the poems were written by kids aged 7 to 17. Look at one of the poems a kid wrote for a person that needed a good poem that day. There are tree branches calling your name. River banks miss your reflection. There is nowhere in the world that considers you foreign. Can you imagine if you're going through a really difficult time in your life and you read that? Can you imagine the hope and the strength and the joy that would bring you? Oh my gosh, that is so great. Duchesky famously said that beauty will save the world. I have that quote in my office, and I believe it. And I believe our mercy and our acts of radical kindness that we give to people will be a great source of that beauty that saves the world. Now let's talk about courage. Sometimes life is scary. You ever notice that? Again, I have panic disorder. I wake up in the morning, life seems scary. But even if you don't have that, even if you don't deal with anxiety attacks or anything, life just seems scary. If you're not scared of the world, read the news one day. You'll be scared, okay? Or just don't read the news, okay? Whatever you want. But we need courage, because without courage, we will never know the world as richly as it wants to be known. And without courage, our lives will be so much smaller than they're designed by God to be. So let's talk about the Land of Oz for a second. You didn't expect that, did you? Okay. But let's talk about the Land of Oz. There are two characters in the books about Oz that are famous for their courage. The first one you know from The Wizard of Oz is the cowardly lion who is eventually infused with great courage. But the second one you probably don't know about unless you've read all the books is Rinkitink. Do any of you even know who Rinkitink is? Oh my gosh, you're totally missing out. You got to go back and read Rinkitink in Oz, okay? Rinkitink is a king who talks way too much and who laughs way too much. So I instantly like him, okay? Because that's a description of my life. But he has great courage. And his courage was the result of him having access to three magic pearls. These pearls would bring him strength, wisdom, and protection whenever he needed it, and that gave him his great courage. Joseph was no doubt afraid as he took his young family and took his first steps towards Egypt. It would have been terrifying for him. But I believe he was also infused with great courage, and that courage didn't come from three magic pearls. It came from the presence of God. You see, Joseph was a Jew. He would have been very familiar with what's called the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. And in it is the book of Joshua. And look what Joshua 1:9 says. Have I not commanded you? This is God talking. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Yeah, I think Joseph would have been afraid, but as he took those steps, I believe he was infused with courage because he knew he and his family weren't on the journey alone. Neither are we, because the same God is with us, and no matter how scary our lives get, and they will get scary, as you take steps into the scary situation that you're facing, that courage will come when you're reminded you're not alone. You're not alone. Now, I would like us to pray this prayer together out loud that I'll put on the screen, because I don't know about you, but I just need courage. I need a lot of courage. So here it is. Let's pray this. I'll stand over here. Dear God, there's so much to worry about right now. We are losing track of what to worry about the most. We admit that we have fear, but please help us to say to our fear, you can't drive, because fear is a terrible driver. And may we dare to live the kind of lives that actually require us to be courageous. Lives where we speak out, step up, and deliver mercy to people who need it. And to stop doom scrolling through the internet, because that's never helpful. Thank you, and everybody said amen to that. Have a glorious week. It was so great to see your faces on this holiday weekend. Remember, sign up to be Santa.